Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Dr. R. Glenn Hall, who is the Assistant Director of the Time Service of the United States Naval Observatory, and one who has been associated with Dr. Markowitz, and who has been an associate through the whole period of time that I have been referring to, the last 20 years or more, and a great strength. Dr. Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. It hasn't been quite 20 years. It's been very close to it, although I have to admit. It is indeed a great pleasure for me to be here on this occasion for the dedication of this observatory. And as Captain McDowell has said, we feel very grateful that we've been able to play a small part in enabling the Dominion Observatory to have a second photographic zenith tube. This type of cooperation is truly beneficial to everyone. I have been asked to say a few words on the program of study that operators of PZTs take under consideration. I hope you'll forgive me saying PZT, but I think you understand what I mean, and it's much easier for me than trying to say PZT each time. First and foremost, as everyone will mention, I'm sure, the photographic zenith tube is used to measure universal time, or Greenwich Mean Time. This really is the primary purpose of the photographic zenith tubes and the reason for their existence in many countries. No other instrument can match the PZT in the determination of time, though the Danjean astrolabe approaches it in accuracy. The PZT allows us to determine local sidereal time from each star that is photographed. From the local sidereal time, we can, by means of rigorous formulae, determine Greenwich Mean Time. In this process, we must adopt a longitude for the instrument, and we must apply certain corrections for the position of the North Pole. And I will have more to say about these corrections a little later. The second program of the PZT is to determine latitude. This program should perhaps really be included with the determination of time, since both are always measured at every observation. The PZT head, which you will see, I think, later today, is rotated exactly 180 degrees between each exposure. This means that a star passing, let's say, to the north of the zenith on the first exposure, the photograph will be on one side of the center of the plate. After the reversal, the second exposure will appear on the opposite side of the center. Thus, half the distance between alternate images of a star measured in a north-south direction is the zenith distance of the star. And the zenith distance and the declination of the star give the latitude of the instrument. Again, as in the determination of time, the PZT gives a more accurate determination of latitude than any other instrument. The two programs that I have mentioned, time and latitude, are directly concerned with the observational data from individual PZTs. It requires only one PZT in order to take under these two programs. I would like to talk very briefly about three main additional programs from PZTs. These use the results of time and latitude in combination with data from other sources and with data from other photographic zenith tubes. First of these indirect programs, let us consider the problem of the rotation of the Earth. Really, this program is a study of the variations in the speed of rotation of the Earth. Since the PZT measures the rotation period of the Earth, is one rotation is 24 hours of universal time, we may compare the results of the PZT in time with an invariant time scale, such as ephemeris time or atomic time, in order to study the variations in the speed of the rotation of the Earth. On comparison of universal time, as determined with the photographic Zenith tube, and atomic time, we find that the Earth has variations in its speed that are both periodic and secular. Periods of 2 weeks, 1 month, 6 months, 12 months, and 14 months have been detected and can, in general, be explained by the action of the moon and the sun on the Earth, by the figure of the Earth, and by wind and tidal action on the Earth. However, after these periodic effects are accounted for, there still remain variations. These variations can be well represented since 1955, the beginning of the atomic time scale, by four parabolic arcs with common tangents. This was proposed by Brouwer in 1952 that this should be the case under certain theories of random accumulation in the convection core of the Earth. The changes in acceleration have occurred approximately every 4 years thus far. That is, at the end of 1957, 1961, and 1965. Because these three changes in acceleration are nearly at constant intervals, this remaining variation in the speed of rotation after the periodic effects are removed can also be represented by a single parabola and a periodic variation of 8 years. However, this is probably simply curve fitting. There's no theory at all to fit this. Little is known about these changes, and we cannot as yet predict when the next change will occur. Second of the indirect programs is the study of the motion of the pole. A study of the variation of latitude and an observed variation of the latitude may be interpreted as a change in the position of the pole. That is, if we find that our latitude is getting smaller, this could mean that the pole is going away from you, or it can be interpreted as a change in the position of the observing site. We cannot say definitely which interpretation is correct. It is very possibly a combination of the two. However, it does seem likely, and there's quite a bit of evidence for it, that there is an apparent secular motion plus an erratic motion of the pole in the direction of 60 degrees west longitude, that is towards, this is about the east coast of Canada, at the rate of approximately 3/1000ths of a second per year. This is about 4 inches of that order. Dr. Markowitz has shown that the erratic motion can be represented empirically as a libration of 24-year periods. The motion of the pole is also periodic with similar periods to those found from studies of the speed of rotation of the Earth. In fact, they were found from the measures of latitude long before the measures of time. All of these motions of the pole result in a correction to the time. As the pole moves, the longitude between this telescope and the Greenwich meridian changes slightly. This, in turn, introduces a change in the determination of time. These changes, called the variation of longitude, must be corrected for in determining Greenwich mean time. The last program I would like to talk about is a program to study continental drift, and I have purposely left this program until last. The results from this PZT here in Calgary with those of the Royal Greenwich Observatory at Herts-Monceau in England are the only two PZTs at present on exactly the same latitude. Washington PZT and the Mizuzawa PZT in Japan are roughly 15 miles apart in latitude, which means they have only half of their SARs in common. Where this PZT and the one at the Royal Greenwich Observatory are on exactly the same latitude. This means they will observe the same stars, and therefore, if the results from the two PZTs diverge, it might well be ascribed to the instruments moving one with respect to the other, since we will no longer have to contend with errors in the positions of the stars that are observed, since both are observing identically the same stars. And if the instruments are in relative motion, this might be continental drift. The amount, if any, to be expected is very small. And the observations will need to continue for many years to confirm any such drift. Continental drifts, or the study of continental drifts, is rather a popular subject among geophysicists and geologists at the present, but has never been confirmed astronomically, probably because of its smallness in quantity and the many complicating factors, such as the star positions in the path, and the motions of the pole and instrumental corrections and so forth. These two PZTs, the one here and at the Greenwich Observatory, will furnish the most precise astronomical observations for the determination of continental drift. In concluding, I would like to echo Captain McDowell and express my pleasure at being able to participate in the mutual cooperation between the Dominion Observatory and the U.S. Naval Observatory, and my great pleasure at being able to attend this meeting here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Hall, and as a memento of this occasion, will you kindly accept a copy of our centennial publication?
Thank you very much.